Rise and shine, rise and shine. Hey, hey, Hardy, wake up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to begin boarding.
Well, how'd you sleep last night?
I don't believe that's any of your business.
If you go to a Bansy Fall and you want to have a prance of Hansel all in fub with you, don't forget to slop your dripper.
Tonight, Linger, what for breakfast?
Dude, apples, bacon, and biscuits.
Well, forget the apples. Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go.
The Zero 900 Show with Craig Flowers.
Morning, Andrew Baker.
Hey, buddy, how's it going?
Great. I'm so glad to have you with some consistency producing. You ready this morning?
Hey, man, it's a big day today. Let's do this.
It's Army Navy.
You got it.
Here we go. You are listening live from the banks of 360 in the high ground. Good Army Navy Saturday morning to you. There are a lot of states that are great, but as you know, there's only one great state. Remember why you came, remember why you left, remember why you stay, and don't mess with Texas on this gorgeous ATX Saturday morning. Pour yourself a strong sip cup of coffee. Load up the Vaqueros breakfast tacos, no te preocupes, Octavius Bishop. 075 on guitar and in studio, Andrew Baker producing behind the glass. Big O is going to talk us through. We've got a good show this morning. Tyler Anderson, Lake Travis Cavalier, is going to join us, professional fisherman and video fishing outdoor expert. And we've got, of course, the Texas Wine of the Week. We got some Army-Navy stuff we're going to break down for you. That game kicks at 2 o'clock in Philadelphia, Lincoln Financial Field. It's going to be a great game. We're going to give you a little history of that. There is a Texas Longhorn tradition with that little history there with that game. So, of course, Tyler Anderson will be brought to you by Benchmark Business Solutions, his CEO and owner, Jeff Horn, whose son, number 7, Tucker Horn, threw for 590 yards last night as the Grand Steers advanced in the state finals, towards the state finals, I should say, up in Lubbock, Texas. And they're going to play again this Thursday night in Frisco at the Star, the Graham Steers. They appear to be on a roll. We're going to do a little get on in there reminders of the day, Andrew, as the Big O 075 who kept...
Good morning.
Good morning. Ricky Williams on his feet, the opponent on his back. And these are some reminders of the day that we're going to deliver you, the listener. Here we go. The get on in there reminders of the day. 3 Saturdays till Christmas. Can you believe that, O?
That's awesome, man. Love Christmas.
No question. Miss Beth has put together our Christmas tree almost single-handedly over the last couple of days. And gosh, it's unbelievable. Tis the season to trim your trees, so get on in there and prune those oaks and powder your B&E bum-bums. Remember that. Prune your oaks. Army-Navy kicks off today at 2 p.m. in Philly. 90% chance of snow, and this could be a classic. Army is wearing white over white with white helmets.
What do you think about that?
That's the art of deception. Do you know we're the only military that part of our operational planning includes a deception plan?
That's awesome.
So if you look at an operations order... which you know you can look at online, just a kind of a template. You'll see, you know, deception. I remember when I served in France, working with some of the French military. They were always talking about, you know, Jesse. I see that you always have a decoy, a deception plan for the enemy. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what we do. For me, it was just what we do. And we did it in World War II when we had blow up decoys and all those sorts of things. But hey, it's going to be 90% chance of snow in Philly. And Army's wearing white helmets, white tops, white bottoms.
Very tactical, the winter camo.
I think they got lucky on that. I don't think that was a plan. By the way, in 1964, the number one ranked Texas Longhorns played the number two ranked Navy midshipman in the Cotton Bowl.
Famous QB in that game, right?
Famous QB for the midshipman was Roger Staubach.
Roger.
Heisman Trophy winner, of course. The MVP of the game, the Longhorns won 28-6. Texas finished 10-0 that year or they went into that game 10-0, and midshipmen were 9-1. The MVPs of the game on the defensive were both Longhorns. Defensive lineman Scott Appleton and Longhorn quarterback Duke Carlisle.
Stud.
Isn't that interesting?
That's pretty
played
cool.
Right here in the Cotton Bowl. Can you imagine Navy and the Longhorns playing in the Cotton Bowl? Now, it's also worth reminding, you know, the Navy always plays Notre Dame, gives them a quick, you know, always a battle towards the end. They win about one out of every seven of those games. There's a long history there why Notre Dame always schedules Navy, and it's a great history. It's the right thing to do, which is what we're trying to be all about here. And, of course, Navy beat the Houston Cougars last year. So when I hear in the afternoon show that, hey, you know, it's really not good football, ask the Cougars how they felt last year when they when they lined up against the ankle biters.
That's all right.
Yeah. That's ask awesome. Them if they thought that was good football.
I would assume that Navy and Army teams playing those teams, those guys just never give up.
Oh,
they
yeah.
never give up. You can, I mean, you can roll them over and over again. You know you're bigger than they are. You know, you may be stronger, but yeah. they're will. They have something different inside.
There was a quarterback. He's on for Notre Dame a long time ago. Not a long time ago, probably 8, 9, 10 years ago. Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn was the quarterback for Notre Dame. And I'm watching Army's playing Notre Dame at Notre Dame. It's a blowout game. There are 2 or 3 minutes left, oh. And the Army team's still battling. They've got it down in the red zone. They've got some timeouts. It's a cold, rainy day. And Army is calls timeout with about, I don't know, less than 2 minutes. They called timeout. They ran the ball. They called timeout again. And Brady Quinn stood on the sidelines and booed the Army team and led the boos from the Notre Dame sideline. Hmm. And I watched that. And Army eventually scored to get a, you know, we want the Army and Navy teams fighting until the end. We want them fighting even in a blowout.
That's a great point.
To the end. I wrote Mr. Quinn a handwritten note and reminded him that you want those guys calling timeout and struggling and battling, trying to fight and blast to every play that they possibly can towards the end. And when you boo that team, just think, you are booing that guy who's going to be riding in a Humvee. Mm-hmm. At a different place, at a different location, Mr. Quinn, when you are riding your Humvee to rookie ball.
That's right. It's bigger than football.
Oh, it's much bigger. It's the only game in the regular season where everyone playing is willing to lay down their lives for everybody watching.
Wow.
And it's remarkable. Now, the Roger Staubach of today is really Alejandro Villanueva. Who served 5 years in Afghanistan, the 6'10" giant, as the Afghans called him, is now the starting tackle, left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers, wears number 78, keeps Ben protected. And you know, there's a case where a guy that went and did what he did, just like Roger Staubach, and came back and now is you know, pursuing a remarkable – it's a remarkable game. But I never heard from Brady Quinn, never got a return reply from my letter, but I'll tell you what – since then, I've watched him kind of grow up on the air listen to him.
That's good stuff.
He's got a different perspective now, as we all do when we're 21.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just kind of realized perhaps that we want to cheer those guys.
That's right. That's good.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. When I was in Columbus, Navy came into the Shoe and played Ohio State 1 year. And it was a big deal because I don't think Ohio State had played Navy in a few years, but – There was actually a big deal with the media in town whether or not fans should boo or cheer against Navy. And they actually interviewed a few of the players. They're like, yes, come and cheer against us. But understand that once the game's over, we're all on the same side.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, no question. So when you watch this game today, know you're going to hear this term, and it's for someone that's not familiar with the game, you're going to hear this term, sing second. In fact, sometimes they put it on the shirt, sing second. And the goal is to be to win the game so that after the game, both teams will go over to the losing side and sing the alma mater, and then both teams will come over at the end of the game and sing the alma mater of the winning team. So sing second is kind of the jargon that's used at both academies. Sing second, sing second.
That's fascinating.
Douglas MacArthur said, and this is a quote, you know, he was the captain of both his Army baseball team at West Point and the football team. And he said, I wish Brady Quinn would have had this up, on the fields of friendly strife are sown the seeds that on other days, on other fields, will bear the fruits of victory. And as the Army team comes out of the tunnel this morning, you may have the opportunity to see an officer standing there with a plaque above his head. And on that plaque is a quote from a five-star general who didn't go to West Point, by the way, who sent a request back in World War II that said, "I need an officer for a secret and dangerous mission. I want a West Point football player." And so there will be an officer standing there with that plaque. That plaque is on the wall right there as so that every player sees it. It's kind of like, you know, play like a champion. They see that every day when they come out for practice. And no doubt that plaque is removed from Mikey Stadium and carried with them on away games. And there will be an officer when they run out of the tunnel holding that plaque, and you'll see people slapping it. What I wish every listener and every fan of football could see, I wish they could all go to the game. I wish there was a way to do that, because during the TV timeouts is when the neatest stories are told. The most chilling stories are told, the most motivational stories, and the inside the Army-Navy game. And you can only see it if you're there.
Wow.
On the video boards.
Got to get there.
Have you ever been there, Big O?
No, I haven't.
I can make that happen for you.
I would
you.
Love to.
Yeah. I can make that happen for you. We need to work on that. Congratulations to E. Hogan, named Austin Radio Network Innovator of the Year. That's true news. He's not going to tell you that because he's such a humble, thoughtful guy. But rest assured that he is the epicenter of production here.
That's awesome.
And just a great American, too, by the way. It was 17 degrees in Amarillo this week. How about that? Reminders of the week. But you may have noticed it was much colder in Minnesota. With a gritty win against the former Rice head basketball coach Mike Rhodes, VCU Rams, the Fightin' 40-Acre Shockas are an example of what a team looks like while they're moving through the developmental process and becoming an elite organization. They are fun to watch. Uh-huh. And as much as I love the 7'9" Mr. Mo Bamba, that wingspan, 7'9", he's not 7'9". I love 21. Uh-huh. I love watching 21. That's a remarkable guy right there. And finally, if you are the 09th caller on the 0900 show this morning at 512-447-3776, if you're the 09th caller, you will go down in history as the person who called between the 8th and 10th caller, which is quite an honor. So light them up.
That's awesome.
Big O, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's a great, beautiful Saturday. beautiful Saturday.
You know that Casey and Lyle talked about. Casey said he didn't have any kids outside playing in the 2 hours worth of snow that we had on the ground yesterday morning. Man, our neighborhood was loaded up.
Mm-hmm.
We had kids scrambling and out. They were just having a ball. It was fun to watch.
My wife picked up my son Anderson from school, and she came home with videos. They were all running in the snow, and Anderson came home. He said, "Hey, Dad, I didn't know it snowed in Texas. You said it done snow in Texas." So he called me out on it.
We'll be back from the banks of 360. You're listening live to 104.9 The Horn, AM 1260.
I love the nightlife. I love my Bud Light. I like them cold and tall.
Go back to the banks of 360 on the high ground. You're listening to the 0900 Show with Craig Flowers and Octavius Bishop, Longhorn legend. Brought his guitar in. We're about to share with you my most embarrassing moment of my life. And that's only to get to the Big O's most embarrassing moment, which I think Longhorn listeners are going to love, because
yeah,
it's a good one. You haven't gone into the details, but you've kind of given me a picture.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we're going to go back and talk about something Andrew mentioned to me. It's Army-Navy Day and the last game of the regular season college football season. A little redundant there. But, you know, so the Cotton Bowl in 1964, the 1st of January, between the Naval Academy and the Texas Longhorns, that was a result of Navy beating Army in the Army-Navy game. Now, the Army-Navy game, of course, as you know, is played the second Saturday of every December. And in 1963, that just weeks after our president's assassination, John F. Kennedy, the game was canceled. But it was Jacqueline Kennedy. It was Mrs. Kennedy, our first lady, who insisted that that game be scheduled and that it be played. That game must happen for the good of our nation. It is part of what we do and who we are. So because of Mrs. Kennedy's insistence that the Army-Navy game be played just a week after the assassination of her husband, that game was played, and that's what ended up with Navy in the Cotton Bowl versus the Longhorns. Boy, those were the reminders of the day. Congratulations, David Martinez. You, in fact, were the ninth caller on the 0900 show, and you'll go down in 0900 history as being the ninth caller that called between the eighth and tenth caller. Big O, get ready, because we're about to share with the listeners the most embarrassing moment of the Longhorn legend, 075. So for me, my most embarrassing moment happened in October of, I was about 7 or 8 years old, and it was a Halloween costume contest. Now, back then, we made our own Halloween costumes. And so my mom and dad took me to a Halloween costume contest on the military base, and we were in a theater. Of course, my last name's Flowers. And so you walk in front of all the judges, and there were probably 200 or 300 kids there. And they called out six costume wearers they chose as the best six. And they called them up on stage, and everyone got to pick out of this basket a prize. I was dressed as a pirate. You remember how we used to do this silly pirate, red bandana, and then you take aluminum foil, cut out your cardboard sword. Well, so the announcer says, he announces, the dragon, the vampire, the whatever. And then he says, and one of the top six is the flower child. Well, by golly, when I'm 7 years old, I am the flower child. And so I jumped up with my little cardboard aluminum foil sword, and I raced to the stage. I was one of the top six, and we got up there. Well, I didn't realize that somebody actually was dressed as a flower child. And so now, instead of six people standing on the stage, there's seven. Mm. And I don't realize this until we get to the end, when everyone's drawing out their skates and their baseball glove and their prizes, and that gets to me. And I'm going, oh, well, I'll take that. Well, that'd be good. I'll take the socks or whatever it was. And all the prizes were gone, and it's just me standing on stage with my stupid little aluminum foil sword. And I thought, oh, it finally hit me. Uh-oh, that was the flower child. I shouldn't be up here. And so I just looked at the audience and just made a pirate sound and held up my sword and kind of walked off. And Mom and Dad didn't say a word to me on the way home. The most embarrassing moment. I've never forgotten it.
That was your Steve Harvey pageant moment.
It was awful. When I think about it still, I go, God, that's just awful. Man. Big O, but you got one that could top that from the banks of 360.
I have a number of embarrassing moments, and I wish mine was when I was 7 or 8 years old. But mine was actually, I wasn't married yet. I wasn't married yet, but I was a grown man, unfortunately. And
what happened?
Well, the first time I had a chance to go to Vegas was a buddy of mine who played with me in the XFL, and he's from Houston, Brian Jones, and He was a linebacker. He played at Oregon State, and we both had injuries, but that's how we got to know each other really well. And he was getting married, and he asked me to come. And I went.
Quite an honor.
Yeah, quite an honor. And I looked up all every place to stay in Vegas, and I picked the Wynn, right? The Wynn Hotel. It's nice.
Good hotel.
Man, it was nice. And I get to the room. I have some time. It's just me, another buddy of mine, Ed, who was my lawyer at the time. He's at the Wynn also. And, man, I get to the room, and I'm like, wow, this is nice.
Nice room.
Nice room. Open up the windows, wide open. I open up the window. And if y'all don't know, I'm kind of telling a little something about myself. So I love bathrooms, really nice bathrooms.
I didn't know that.
And so I get to the room, I put my clothes down, I take my pants off.
That's a nice bathroom.
And I'm relaxing and I'm chilling. And there's a big old fruit basket there. I get in the bathroom. There's a TV in the bathroom.
Come on, it's a big deal. Not for the big O. You coming from using a payphone all your life?
Well, yeah. I had played pro ball since then though. But I get there and I see the bathtub. I was like, man, when was the last time you took a bath? And I'm talking to myself.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you had to be a little kid last time you were able to get in a bath. I said, you could fit in that bath. I say, wow, yeah, I'm going to take me a bath and watch ESPN.
So Big O gets in the bathtub. Big O
Well, I don't just get in the bathtub. I noticed that there's some bubbly stuff, like the little suddy stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I say, you know, man, there's only two of those there. So I go out in the hallway, and I see a little carton, and I find the lady who's cleaning the rooms. And I get about 15 of those jokers.
Big O's big.
You
need a lot of soap.
I poured her on as scalding hot as I could. That water scalding hot as I could, and I put all 15 of those soap things in there.
Oh, you got some bubbles now,
bro. I'm watching ESPN
in the bathtub.
In the bathtub
at the Wynn.
All right, I think I need to get up. We're gonna have dinner now. I try to stand up, and my foot slips. I try to grab up and pull myself up, and I'm slipping. I put too much soap in the bottom that I can't get a grip to stand up.
You were greased up.
I was greased up. I was greased up. And if anybody knows me, I'm a big man.
How big are you, Big O?
I'm three and a few quarters. So
you got a lot to manage.
I got a lot to manage, man. And I everything was fine. And I kept watching TV. The water started getting cold, and I started panicking. Okay, I start panicking, and all I could think about and have visions of what's going to happen if someone has to come in here and save me, and I die in here. And I'm thinking I'm going to die in there, or somebody going to come in.
I
can't get out of the bathtub. So after about an hour 15, I'm going and I slip and I hit my toe, my pinky toe on something at the end. I'm going, wait a minute, there's a plug there. after 15 minutes, I unplug it, let the water out, and head on to dinner.
And the Big O can get on now. The most embarrassing moment of the Big O's life. He's slippery when wet. He's greased up. He can't get out of the bathtub. The Big O, 075, struggling in the bathtub at the Wynn Hotel. What year was that?
I got married in 2007. It was about 2006. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. The Army-Navy game kicks off today at 2 o'clock Central Time. So when you talk about the Army-Navy game, you've got the Army Mules. Of course, they're just known as the Cadets, the West Point Cadets. And then you've got the Midshipmen. So the first game, the Army-Navy game, was played in 1890. It didn't even exist until a cadet took the initiative, Dennis Mikey, who later lost his life in the Spanish-American War. He took the initiative to invite challenged Navy to a football game, and the leadership at West Point said, okay, you can go ahead with this, but Navy's got to come to West Point. Well, Navy didn't have any money to get the team from Annapolis, Maryland, up the Hudson River to West Point. So the West Point cadets said, okay, we'll pay for half of it. So it cost $550 to take the entire Army Navy football team from Annapolis to West Point via ferry. And so the cadets all chipped in 52 cents each and paid for half of that, $275, and brought the midshipmen up to play on what was then, you wonder how you get the term the gridiron, you know, the gridiron mm-hmm. of football. Well, back then it was a gridiron. It was like graph paper. Wow. It was chalked off like a grid. And so the Navy team arrives. They are getting off the ferry at the Hudson on the Hudson River, and they're walking their way up to the Army-Navy game to play on the parade field, which has been chalked into a gridiron. And as they get up there, as they're walking up, they're realizing, hey, we don't have a mascot or anything. We're just kind of throwing this thing together, just kind of like a neighborhood football game. And so there's a goat tied up by one of the non-commissioned officers' quarters that they walk by. And so they run over and untie the goat and grab the goat and let the goat lead them up the hill to this game. So that's how they became the goat became the mascot. And every year the cadets at West Point try to figure out a way. There's a great picture of the gridiron that they played on online. You can actually see that, and you can see the Hudson River in the background. But every year the West Point cadets try to figure out a way to borrow the Navy goat for the Army game, and they were successful this year. In fact, there's a video that's been seen over 2.4 million times this week where the superintendent, Lieutenant General Bob Caslin, led the effort this year, at least appeared at Eisenhower Hall with the Navy goat in front of the Corps of Cadets. This is going to be a spirited game, I promise you that.
That's good stuff.
Every cadet will be wearing the Army-Navy long-sleeve custom-designed shirt that the cadets mm-hmm. designed. Lyle got one. Casey got one. Andrew, you got one.
The Big O got one.
The Big O got one. Yeah. Did that fit okay?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, my wife washed it, too, so that's good.
It's good to go?
It's good to go.
All right, well, we're going to be back from the banks of 360. Tyler Anderson joining us. We'll see you on High Ground.
This is Trace Adkins wishing my friend Craig Flowers all the best in Austin, Texas. I'll see you on the High Ground.
Trace Adkins, former football player in college. He's been to West Point a few times. Hosted him several times. What a remarkable singer, songwriter. Started out on the football field, went to the oil fields, and ended up in Nashville. Now he needs a haircut. The use of the flying wedge was used back in the 18, 90 in the first early games. That is what – it was a military formation. We're talking about the Army-Navy game where the superintendent just did the Army rocket on ESPN. Led the cadets in Army Rocket, and head coach Jeff Munkin right now being interviewed. The snow's pouring down in Philadelphia at Lincoln Financial Field. Jeff Munkin, who is on a one-game streak of beating the Naval Academy. Of course, they handed it to the Army Black Knights for about a dozen years. It was pretty rough there for a while. Of course, we did that to Navy back in the 1990s. But the flying wedge was used by Navy in the first Army game. And the Army player, Kirby Walker, was knocked out four times during that game. And he was carried off the field. The flying wedge, you may remember, recall that in history, where everyone would just lock arms. It really came from a military formation. And it was because of the use of the flying wedge and all the injuries that the flying wedge was eliminated and became part of the rules. You cannot do the flying wedge anymore.
Whoa. That's, hold on here. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
He was knocked out four times?
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah, he was a gone Johnny. Yeah, think about that.
Four times? I mean, and guys, if a guy wobbles a little bit, they're out of the game now.
Break, sit, rep, follows. The last time he was knocked out, it resulted in him being carried off the field to the hospital after not recovering from consciousness. He was a gone Johnny the fourth time.
Oh, my goodness.
They're just carrying him to the huddle.
They're just carrying him off. One player, you know, as the game proceeded, the Army-Navy game, one player actually died in the game.
Oh!
Years later. There's so much history to this game.
Goodness.
It's Army protested one of the games because Navy won it on a fake punt in the early 90s. And they said, when you line up to in a kick formation, you are bound by your word to kick away.
Wow.
They invoked the honor code on him.
It's interesting.
It's 60-50-7 is the overall record right now. Navy owned the Army early on, but the very next year, Army traveled to Annapolis. When Army played that game, it was a different outcome in 1891. Much better prepared, the Army team. They won 32-16. Keep in mind, Air Force isn't even mentioned in here because why? Air Force was part of the Army back then.
Mm-hmm. It was. I found out the Academy was established in 54.
Oh, the Air Force Academy.
The Academy, yeah. The Air Force was established in 47, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, the Air Force itself.
The actual Air Force is separated.
The Air Force Academy
was
in 1954.
Correct.
The neat thing about these academies, I think, is they're located in some of the most beautiful places.
58 miles north of New York City, West Point, 16,000 acres on the banks of the Hudson River, the mighty Hudson, where the reason it's there is because it's the only place, it's a geographical, where the Hudson River bends. We're going to get back to that. We got a caller on the line right now. Thanks for the reminder. Tyler Anderson coming to us right now. Brought to you by Howen Wrestling Wealth Management, like you've seen no other. Tyler Anderson, the Lake Travis Cavalier, who has become an internet sensation, a professional angler and tech wizard. He is a YouTube star, and he's bound to be the next Kevin Van Dam. I call him the king, the shaky head king. Tyler Anderson, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be on the show.
Man, we're great to have you. I've been following you now for a few months, young man. You've just got a great way about you. You've got a great spirit. You're really all about the viewer, the listener. You're really a great teacher. Even new. How old are you, young man?
I'm 20.
20 years old, and he's an old soul, Big
That's
O.
That's awesome, man.
I mean, he is like a 30-year-old in his production and the way he communicates. Talk a little bit about your background and how you became such a fishing enthusiast and also a professional angler. Send it.
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up just like most kids, you know, fishing with their grandpa on the dock, and kind of from there, my passion kind of exploded into a love for just kind of, I'd say, the whole process of fishing. So not just going out and catching fish, but I love the drives to lakes. I love the sunrises and sunsets, and just kind of the whole skill set that it took to catch bass, you know, in every part of the country. And so I decided to start a fishing team when I was in high school at Lake Travis, and we were a very successful team. And kind of since then, I've started making videos and done the YouTube thing, and now I fish for Texas A&M. So it's been a cool process of just learning the whole ropes of the fishing industry and the fishing community. And I love it.
Well, Lose is a big sponsor of yours. I'm sure you're throwing the Mach 2, the Mach 3. Those are great. I own both of those setups. And, those are great setups. The industry has grown so much. Technology has really helped. But your videos, you're able to show a viewer exactly what happens underwater when a fish strikes.
Yes, so that's kind of, I'd say, the video series that put my channel on the map was my underwater series. And so I was able to, in the springtime when the fish spawned and they made up shallow, I was able to put a camera down there and kind of, you know, show the viewers really what happens underwater when a fish eats your lure. And people are very intrigued by that because no one else had ever done it before.
Well, you do it with such quality, and you're so tech savvy. You're a great editor of the videos. You get to the meat. You've got a great feel for what the viewer wants to see, so there's not a lot of nonsense. You get right to the chase.
Exactly. No, I know that the viewers want to see quality content, and they want to hear about the fish that they love to catch, and so that's what I want to show them.
What's the biggest fish you've caught, Tyler Anderson?
Oh, man, it's probably a redfish, but the majority of the fish that I go for is bass. Instead, it's almost 10 pounds, 9.85.
Mm. Well, son, you got some catching to do. I've got a 12.5, so maybe you and I can get out and we can do a little dance on Lake Austin together. But those fish at Lake Austin, they're hard to find, but once you find them, you better have retied and checked your drag.
Mm. Oh, of course.
Well, we're awful proud of you. A lot of our listeners follow you. How can we continue to follow you on Twitter? I know you're good friends with Baker Mayfield. I know you're probably counting on him tonight to win the Heisman Trophy, Lake Travis Cavalier.
Yes, we are. Yeah, we're big fans of Baker. We're hoping that he wins the Heisman tonight. But I do have a YouTube channel. It's called Tyler's Real Fishing. And then basically all other social medias, from Instagram to Twitter to Facebook, are all Tyler's Real Fishing as well.
Tyler, we're going to have you in studio for long. You have a great holiday. Take care of finals. Handle your business down there. And come on back here to Central Texas, and we're going to have you in studio. It's at Tyler's Real Fishing, R-E-E-L. Tyler Anderson, professional angler and just videographer extraordinaire and a marketing genius. He is an up-and-coming superstar in the world of fishing. I look forward to having you in studio, young man.
Thank you, Colonel.
You bet. We'll see you on the high ground.
Sounds good.
You know, I talked to you a little bit about Miss Beth putting together our tree, and some folks, it's kind of could be a controversy. Some folks talk about, we don't get a real tree; we get an artificial tree. Let me talk to that a little bit. The tree growers, mostly up in Asheville, North Kakalaki, they make their living growing Christmas trees. Huh. Christmas trees are a crop. We replenish that. We buy the cut Christmas trees. They are a crop for these Christmas tree growers. Now, I wish we had a real Christmas tree in our home. We don't.
We don't.
I wish we did, but we've got some allergy issues in the house. But I'll tell you, I've got some great memories of growing up. I love a real tree. We don't have one. But when I grew up on the corner of Bitters and Wetmore in Bexar County, we had a cedar tree as a Christmas tree. We couldn't afford to go out and buy a commercial tree.
Wow.
And my grandfather would put me on his shoulders, and after a deer hunt in a homemade ground blind, we'd pick out the finest cedar tree that we could find. We always cut one that was too big.
Were y'all just sneezing through the night?
No. You know, I just remember our home smelling like great cedar. I thought that was Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
At 2511 Bitters Road.
That's awesome.
And, you know, it was fried venison and a cedar tree is Christmas tree. I thought it was
That's
normal.
That's awesome, man.
Homemade Christmas ornaments. We even had candles.
Wow.
But we would come out of the woods, and I'd be on, you know, Pawpaw's shoulders, and he'd have his Winchester Model 94 30-30 in his left hand, and he'd be dragging out a cedar tree on his right hand, and I held on to his big old ears.
That's awesome.
And we'd come out of the woods, and boy, I was excited about having the Christmas tree and bringing it home, Big O.
That's awesome, man.
Couldn't afford a real tree. I love a real tree, but if you're in between, think about this. It's a crop. Buy a real tree.
Go get a cedar tree. They're all around.
No, there are plenty of cedar trees. Cedar's not a crop. We'll be back from the banks in 360. Andrew Baker, producing for us. Big O. See you on the high ground.
The Texas Wine of the Week.
Well, that's a good song.
Love that.
Welcome back to the 0900 Show. On the high ground, the banks of 360. I was a reggae fan in college. Still am. I let that play a little bit longer today because hopefully you listeners out there enjoyed it just as much as I do, because we're at the Texas Wine of the Week segment. Why do we do this, Big O? I can tell you why. Because the Texas grape growers deserve it. Mm. and the winemakers. Now, look, I know what Texas wine was 20, 30 years ago. I get that. I tried it back then. But I've lived in Paris, not Paris, Texas, Paris, abroad. I've lived all over the world in Europe, and I've tasted some great wines, to include France's famous 1961 Saint-Emilion Grand Cru. It's hard to say. It's one of their best Bordeaux's ever. But we have reached the point now in the great state where these Texas grape growers and winemakers have become award-winning, medal-winning, best-in-class wines, and we just don't know it yet. I'm determined to get to be the voice of Texas wines. I want to be the voice of Texas wines and tell their story. Right here, we've got incredible wines in the great state. We're going to announce one here, and it's an expensive bottle of wine, the most expensive we've had all year. And it's a cab. And I'm saying that because I know we've got to give gifts during the holidays, and there's no better gift than giving something from the great state of Texas made by Texan hands. Now, the best-in-class wines for 2017. Now, this was chosen, Octavius, from the Callies in San Francisco at the wine tasting, blind taste testing. Now, even the Callies are choosing Texas wines.
Wow.
They have arrived. We have big, beautiful, award-winning wines in the great state. And here are the ones that won best-in-class. Brennan Vineyards Viognier 2015. That's about a $25 or above bottle of wine. Hack Vineyards and Winery. They were Wine of the Week a couple weeks ago. We had Raymond Hack on last week. Tempranillo 2015. Los Pinos Ranch Vineyards Sweetbush Colibri. It's a dry rose. Messina Hoff Winery. It's a Merlot 2015. These are the best in class, seven of them. Parisos, I may not be pronouncing that right. Parisos Vineyards and Winery. They're Dolcetto 2015, best in class. Trilogy Cellars, they're Malbec 2015, never say later for a Malbec, $25 and above. And Wedding Oak Winery, they're Sweet Asylum 2015, it's a white blend, $20 and above. I was on the phone earlier this week with Debbie Reynolds. She's the director of the Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association. So she gets all of the input. They meet once a year. They're going to meet in Irving in February to promote Texas wines. I'm telling you, Texas wines have arrived in the great state. They are award-winning. It's where we ought to be spending our money when we buy wine. They're available at all of the places where you would buy wine. Go in and ask for them. And I want to tell you a story. Dukeman Winery, chosen as one of the Wine of the Week's first of the 0900 show. Dukeman Winery. We chose their Viognier as the wine of the week. You know what happened? It sold out.
That's awesome.
There was one bottle left. I left it there for someone else to discover it over Twin Liquors. They one bottle left. I didn't buy it last night. The guy asked me, he said, how did that happen? And I said, well, we started this segment, the Wine of the Week, to support Texas wine and grape growers because they need it. They're like our farmers. Mm. They're passionate. They figured it out. Yes, their product wasn't up to par 30 years ago. It is now. The Callies are even picking it as best in class, and we've got a big one here today.
Wow.
Now, this bottle, don't stutter, because this is a $38 bottle of wine from the Texas Hill Country. It's called the Meritus Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot. Cabernet 55%, Merlot 45% from Flat Creek Vineyards. In the Hill Country.
What kind of meat you eat with that?
Man, you got to go with the prime. You got to go with prime beef.
Okay.
Choice. Now, here's what the French will tell you. Really, the secret is it's really your palate. And everyone has a different palate. So if you like white wine with red meat, bon ça va. So with a red wine, you know, typically you're going to go with a prime steak. Sometimes you can get a high choice steak. Remember, there are three kinds of steaks: prime, choice, and select.
Oh, I understand the meat.
Stay above. You're the meat man. Smoke meat. This is the 2012 Texas Hill Country Red Wine Meritus from Fall Creek Vineyards. And you better hold on. It's a $38 bottle of wine, but I'm telling you, it's just as good as a Camus $75 bottle of wine that you're going to spend. This is a big, beautiful wine from Fall Creek Vineyards, Meritus, the Texas Wine of the Week. We're going to continue to support you out there, grape growers, winemakers. We're going to be the voice of Texas wines. Debbie Reynolds, you're doing a great job out there. We look forward to meeting all the Texas wine growers, grape growers, I should say, at your association convention in Irving, Texas in February. Boy, Octavius, I've only got one pass to those, and I know you don't drink wine, but, man, we're going to get behind this thing. We are going to be it. Big O, it's Army-Navy Day.
Yes.
It's Army-Navy. There's only one game. We got to read one sponsorship thing here, but it's Army. Who you got? The Army, the quarterback is a kid by the name of Bradshaw. Mm-hmm. It's his senior year. It's his first year. He knows what it's like to beat Navy. They beat him last year in a tough game. 90% chance of snow. It's snowing right now as I'm looking over your shoulder. Let's talk about Benchmark Business Solutions. I'll give you time to think about who you got. Both teams are going to run the option. Yep. So Benchmark Business Solution is the only Platinum Xerox agency in the Austin, Texas. We have one of these blowtorches of a machine in our home, and it just makes all the drama go away with copying. And they are on it. You talk about service. Unduplicated service is their motto. And you can believe the hype. I know the CEO and owner, Jeff Horn, guy out of Lubbock, Texas. He was a quarterback in high school. He went to Texas Tech. Benchmark Business Solution is Xerox's first elite accredited managed print services. They have won so many awards. Benchmark's coverage spans 100 counties across 3 states. And they are led by one of their great salespersons, who's a chaparral, Dana Kerr, right here on the other side of 360. Benchmark Business Solutions, number one Xerox sales agency in the United States, and they are a great sponsor, and they sponsor the Wine of the Week. By the way, up there in Lubbock, they make some great wines, and I know they're dialed in right now because Debbie sent all the information out about this show, The Voice of Texas Wines. Congratulations to Flat Creek Estates. Their merit is chosen as the Texas Wine of the Week. Big O, it's the Army-Navy game. Kick it, too. It's snowing big time in the background. Who you got?
I'm going with Army. Army, I think, is having a better year.
They really are.
They are. And, you know, last year I saw Navy do some great things, you know, in that conference against Houston and some other teams. But I'm going with Army this
Navy's
year.
Always a threat. Notre Dame hates playing them every year, but they will play them every year. A lot of history there. Both teams run the triple option. You're going to see some twists to that today. The kid Bradshaw, the quarterback for Army, is a remarkable young man of character. He's a winner. He almost decided not to come back to focus on studies. It's going to be a great game. I know all the folks over at Sportsman's Finest, Scott Calvin, they're going to be watching the game. The new leadership over there, Chris, they're all going to be watching the Army-Navy game. It's a big game. It's the only game in the country where everyone playing the game is willing to lay down their lives for the freedom of those watching.
Good stuff.
The Army-Navy game. Person you got to pay attention to on the Navy side is that Navy fullback. He's a beast. He's a threat. He's like an Army tank back there.
Aren't they always?
They have the best. Now, Ken Niumatalolo, that'll be enough of that talk. I rehearsed that like 38 times yesterday to make sure I get it right. He'll have his Hawaiian lay on as it's the snow. He's from Hawaii, you know, was the assistant coach under the former Georgia Tech coach. His name slips me right now.
Isn't it Paul Johnson?
Paul Johnson was the head coach for so many years from Asheville, North Kakalaki, where they grow Christmas trees as a crop. Now the head coach at Georgia Tech, Ken Niumatalolo, always figures out a way, as you said, Andrew, to find a great fullback. Those guys are they just keep bringing that full. You stop the fullback, you stop the machine. Mm-hmm. But Bradshaw, he's just going to be too much, in my opinion. Remember, it's going to be 90% chance of snow, and I'm watching it over your shoulder right now. And my goodness gracious, who knows if there'll be a hostage exchange at halftime? They call it a hostage exchange. It's the exchange students. Every fall semester, the Naval Academy sends some midshipmen to West Point. Army sends some cadets to spend a semester at the Naval Academy.
Man.
And at halftime, they have what they call the hostage exchange. And it's interesting. They do it on the 50-yard line. TV really doesn't show much of it, but it is a neat deal because on the backs of the midshipmen, on the backs of the Army, they will have signs that will say, you know, it's kind of like the kick me thing, but it'll say, you know, beat Navy or beat Army, and then it'll say you can have them back. And as soon as the exchange is complete, the cadets sprint into the stands to get back with the Corps, and the midshipmen do the same thing on the other side. It's typically the president, vice president, secretary of defense come to that game, and they spend one half of the game on the Navy side, and at halftime, they are handed over after the hostage exchange to the other team, and the representative from our nation's capital will watch the second half on the other side.
Wow.
The Army-Navy game. Nothing like it. Okay, Andrew, that'll do it for us, the wine of the week. We're going to be back next, the 23rd of December. I'm headed down to, you know, the owner of the Lake Austin Spa, Billy Rux, has invited me to go duck hunting down in Gaydon, Louisiana. I'm going to whistle while I'm duck hunting down there.
There you go.
Hey, have a great ATX Saturday morning. I love this song. Laugh and dance. Smile.
Just purse your lips and whistle. That's the thing.
Just whistle. See you on the high ground.